Vectis Radio. Vectis Radio. FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
The Mid-Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy and support to businesses, public sector and private clients across the island. PC Consultants, an award-winning company celebrating 25 years in business.
It's just gone 12:05. You're listening to Vectis Radio. And just in case you didn't know, there is a little matter of a general election on December the 12th. Now, what we've decided to do here at Vectis Radio is get in all six parliamentary candidates, not together, get them in separately so we can have a conversation. So we know where we're going to put our cross when December the 12th comes. You might have already done it because, of course, you can do the postal votes as well. But you'd be daft to sort of, not do it straight away. You want to do it once you've heard all of the candidates. Now, with me this lunchtime is Richard Quigley.
Yep.
And you are standing for Labour.
I am indeed, Ian.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. Everyone else has been invited. Hopefully they're all going to come on. We've had one on so far. You are number two. So basically we're going to find out what you're all about. I think a lot of people will probably assume that Labour, so we roughly. But your manifesto doesn't come out until tomorrow.
No, that's correct.
And neither does the Conservatives. I'm thinking, hang on a minute. Surely if you're going on a campaign trail, you'd have had that already in place.
You would have thought so, wouldn't you? I think some of it's because they try to make it as current as possible. But yes, we're all waiting with bated breath for tomorrow. A lot of policy has been spread around amongst us already. So we are on top of it. But tomorrow is a big day for us all, actually, yeah.
Okay. What I'd like to do is just find out, so people get a flavour. It won't be aggressive. It won't be, because I'm a great believer in where we've got to, where we are today is because we've all had aggression and we have not been listening, and too many people butt in and so on and so forth. And we never find out the truth. So mm-hmm. it's all about finding out about you, what you're going to do for the island, how you see it, happening in the future. So first of all, let's find out about you, Islander.
I've been on the island for coming up to 17 years, Ian. I moved here to buy a business in Cowes. I was very, very lucky. Prior to that, we lived up north, so don't hold that against me. Both me and my wife are in engineering.
Whereabouts up north?
Leeds we moved down from. I'm not originally from Leeds, originally from the East Midlands, Nottingham side.
Right, okay.
Very lucky to move down here. Almost moved to Manchester, but dodged that and ended up on the Isle of Wight.
Right, okay. You've been here ever since?
Yeah, here ever since, and absolutely love it.
Married? Family.
Married, two kids, two daughters, so I must have done something wrong at some point in a previous life.
Right, okay.
No, they're great. We live in Cowes, and we've been very lucky. We've got a good set of friends around us, and the business has done very well, and we've got some great people supporting us, so we really enjoy it down here.
Okay. I mean, the differences between some of the candidates is that they have to pay their own way, but you've got a party backing you. Is that right?
It is, yes. We don't get any party machine down here, so it is all volunteers. They do pay the deposit, and they do pay a lot of the leaflet costs and whatever, but we are constantly fundraising on the island for the constituency Labour Party to help us with the campaign. So it's not as if I was already in government and I was the shadow Treasury Minister or something, where they come and we get some big help. That's not happening on the island.
No, sure. Lots of questions between now and 1 o'clock. Obviously, we had Julian Crixley stood last time.
Yes, yeah.
And up until recently, I thought he was going to stand again. So have you been chucked in at the deep end? When did you find out that you were going to be standing?
I apply. I've been wanting to do this for 10 years. If you ask my wife, she'll say I've been banging about it for long enough. So I actually applied through the proper channels, and you go through to a selection criteria. Julian decided, and Julian's a friend, he decided very late, really, to pull out, and it was for personal reasons and nothing else, because he's chairman of the constituency Labour Party and a very good chair at that. It was then came down to me and two other candidates, and I was very lucky enough to be chosen then, and it was all very quick after that, as you can imagine.
Okay, we were talking weeks, months, or
weeks and days, really, because this isn't a marginal seat. It's not a priority, really, for certainly the Labour Party to say, right, we need to start 3 months out. So it was within their schedule for the seats that they want to fight, but the process is not as complicated, if you like. So it is still a very in-depth process but it's not something you'd necessarily hear about outside of the CLP.
How'd you overcome the fact that, because obviously last time he did quite well. He got 18,000 votes.
Yeah, just shy of 18,000 votes, which is brilliant on the island.
And I don't think that Labour have got on the island that amount of votes since probably the 1950s,
yeah,
possibly the
60s. Yeah.
So he did very, very well. So how do you make up, step into those shoes? Because obviously, doing it at the last minute as well is going to be a big ask.
It is, and luckily Julian's a pretty big chap, as in, I don't mean big physically, but emotionally, because he's given me all of his support and he's helping with his campaign, which I think is quite incredible for somebody who'd thrown 2.5 years of his life since the last election in preparing for this. And he's stood right by my side along with everyone else in the CLP. So I'm pretty lucky very lucky to have Julian alongside me with this. It means we can build on what he's done. I've got all his experience, as well as he's quite happy to push the things he knows I can do in this time round.
Okay. One of my, I look at it and I say, for the first time ever, I don't know who I'm going to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know who I'm going to vote for. There is a danger that I might not even vote.
Yeah.
I don't want that. And I'm hoping that one of these meetings, one of these discussions, there's something, the penny will drop and we'll think, right, okay, that's where I'm going. Because I'm disillusioned, like many people.
Yeah.
I want people that are in power to listen to its flock, help people in need. They need to be boosting the economy as well properly and not greedily, mm-hmm. Helping people that won't help anybody else or that keep the cream for themselves and so on. But more sort of transparent.
Yeah.
I just look at where we are on the island. I'm quite sort of angry about the fact that we've got 9,000 young people, kids, that are in what they would call child poverty.
Yeah, it's disgraceful.
Here we are, it's 2019, and, we've got all these wonderful technology and massive companies that are earning mega bucks, and we've seemed to have kids that are living in poverty. And then it gets worse. I mean, I think in some ways we've got this fantastic machine, the food bank.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it does wonderful work. But this is Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And why have we got food banks?
I agree. I mean, if I'd said to my gran, bless her, she's long since passed, that in 10 or 15 years' time from where she was, that we'd have food banks in this country, she'd have laughed at me, not in a happy way. She'd have thought I was joking. It's a situation that personally really does upset me. I've visited a school whereby year six, 68% of their kids are in child poverty and they're getting the pupil premium for. That's not something it's not a sentence that she'd leave my lips in anywhere, especially on the Isle of Wight. And we're in a situation now where we can't afford not to put this right, because we're literally on the very edge of this turning into the haves and the have-nots, far worse than we've ever seen. That isn't something that should be even possible in a country that's the fifth richest in the world. We should be funding certainly education properly. We need to close the gap in per pupil funding. So you've got high schools losing on average £300 per pupil. Now, the government will say they've increased funding. One, it's not true. Two, all they've done is offered a paltry pay rise to the staff. 82 to 90% of a school budget is staff. There's no money to be saved. They've gone back to them again this year for more savings. Now, the only people that suffer in all this are the kids. And the kids are the people that are going to be paying our pensions. They're the ones that are going to get us out of the climate crisis. They're the ones that are going to find an end to Brexit, if we ever get an end to it, or where they'll still be talking about it in 50 years' time. And we're not investing. And this is, as a businessman, this is the worst investment we are not making in our kids. We should be funding them not for a return on money, but a return for their happiness, their intelligence, and what they bring to the future.
Well, that I've always said, they are the future.
Yeah.
We should be looking after them.
Yeah.
And it really pains me to think that we've got food banks.
Yeah.
It's not just been a couple of years.
No, it's been far too long.
I speak to people that, and you think, surely you're not on, you have to, yes, really?
Yeah.
And you think, good grief, are things really that bad?
Yeah.
I'm very lucky, I've never had to use one.
Mm.
But I really feel for those people that have. And you think, okay, thank God that they're there. Mm. But come on, this is Britain. We're better than that.
And you do feel lucky because you're not using them. And I do spend time at the food bank for different reasons. But we're in a situation now, I think people, like you were saying, you don't know if you're going to vote. Is those of that are politically engaged are thinking about this now, and you're inviting us in because you're interested in it. Is the average person, is all they're thinking about is heating and eating. They're not thinking about voting because they're worried about, will their paycheck stretch to pay their rent or their mortgage if they're lucky enough to be on the housing ladder? can they afford to put food on the table for all of them, or is it a day they're choosing to just feed the kids because it's a school day, and avoiding having to go to the food bank, because the food bank do an amazing job, but it must be a very difficult decision to be able to get up and look in the mirror and go, be worried that you haven't provided. And that's nothing against the food banks, because I think Hannah does a fantastic job at the food bank.
Absolutely.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And without them, lots of people would be lost. But we shouldn't be in that situation, Ian.
No,
and same as you, it genuinely upsets me. Outside of politics, just personally, it upsets me.
Okay, look, I'm going to rough you up now.
Yep, go on.
Okay, get ready.
I won't take it personally.
This is the one thing that does make me grumpy.
Yeah.
Okay? I've been voting since 1983.
Yeah.
Okay, I've never voted for a winner.
Okay.
But I voted for Brexit,
yep,
and we won that one.
Yeah.
And even the one that I do win, you're going to try and take away from me by giving other people a blooming another vote. And I'm thinking, that's not what I voted for. And I win one time, and you want to take that. Why do you want to take that away from me?
Do you know what? I don't want to take it away from you at all, Ian. I'll go on to our position in a moment, but I think personally it's more important. Is we've got to this sort of level of discourse in this country that the win and lose is we're against each other, is that your side win and I voted Remain, my side lost, therefore one side is wrong. Now, there's too much about saying people that voted Leave didn't know what they were voting for. I don't believe that for a minute. I think
otherwise you're calling me an idiot, aren't you?
Exactly, and I don't think anybody that gets up in the morning, yeah, quite clearly you're not. But anybody that gets up in the morning and decides to go into a ballot box or use their postal vote for anything at all isn't an idiot. And I think we're in very, very dangerous territory to say people are. The problem we've had is had a government that have had more than one opportunity to try and get Brexit through. They keep telling us they can. There's no single version of it, and that's the problem, which then means any version of Brexit they do offer, most Brexiteers are unhappy with. Quite rightly so, because no one's actually told you what to expect. They allowed you to believe whatever you put your cross in the box for. And that's not your fault. That really isn't the fault of people voting, because everybody should be proud of their democratic right to put their cross in the box. It brings us to the situation now, which unfortunately, the only way out of this is it started with the people and it needs to go back to the people. And 2-3 years ago when it happened, I wasn't keen on a second referendum at all. I thought, look, I'd given my losers consent to say, yep, let's get Brexit out of the way. Let's move on to the stuff that's important, like schools, communities and the NHS. But we've ended up in a situation where nobody can give you the answer. So the only way to solve it is have one version of Brexit, ask people to be proud of how they voted, vote again on what they believe, and then draw that line and let's go, well, okay, now let's sort out the country. Let's make sure we don't need food banks. Let's look after those kids who've lost their pupil premium, not getting funded well enough, and make sure the communities can flourish again. And that, to me, is far more important once that's drawn a line under than going around in this loop about get Brexit done and it'll be a hard Brexit and promising people things that aren't possible.
Do you know what, though? I mean, when you look at this, I can't help thinking that it's an opportunity for Labour to use this to try and get those votes that people, the Remain votes. And the reason why I say that, and I'm pointing the finger not just at one party, I'm pointing the finger at all of these politicians that have not made it happen. You had 3 years, 3.5 years, not you personally, you didn't have a vote. But my thought process behind that, you've had 3 years to do it, and now we can't do it. There was a situation where the Tories did have a majority. Mm-hmm. It was a small majority. Mm. They called a general election. And what happened? They had a weaker majority, but they borrowed some votes from elsewhere. And I'm worried that what's going to happen is we're going to end up with a very similar position and we're not going to be able to move forward.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
That would be my worry. So my thought process was just get it done.
Mm.
And we should have got it done, but we couldn't. But we're going to be in a position where we still can't get it done, and yet we've had another general election. We've had how many? 2015, yeah. 2017,
ever
2019?
Ever since the Fixed Term Parliament Act, we've had more than ever.
I mean, in a minute, they're going to get Ant and Dec to host it and make a yearly thing of it. I mean, it's got to the point where, you know, I don't trust anybody.
Okay.
I don't trust what they're doing. I think, you know, just get it done. For goodness sake, we voted on it. But also, I can kind of, I look at it and I think, okay, did we really know what we were voting for? Do we really want to give people the opportunity? I guarantee that if there was a vote tomorrow, people would vote to come out just to get it done, purely and simply, because they want it done.
Yeah.
And they voted for it. And since then, Europe have really shown their hand. They don't care. That's what I'm getting. That's the vibe I'm getting from.
And at the end of the day, as politicians, and I'm flattering myself by saying that at the moment, but our job is to listen rather than just to tell all the time. And people have got jaded by it, but it is such an important decision. We can't let them just go, let's get it done, because it won't be the version of Leave that you thought everybody thought they were being promised. And I do agree with what you're saying. It is a case of the Tories did have the opportunity. They called a general election. If you could almost think they did it on purpose, so they didn't have to deal with the situation, lost the majority and put themselves in a position whereby nothing was ever going to pass through Parliament. Not worse still, we had no domestic policy going through Parliament at the time because all the oxygen was being taken up by Brexit. So now we're in a position, which you are entirely correct, is they're in a complete stalemate, with Brexiteers quite rightly saying, I want to leave, because that's what they voted for. And Remainers saying, well, I was prepared to leave, but you've not come up with a sensible plan, so therefore I'm not prepared to agree with you to leave. And where does that leave the rest of us? When we're walking down the street, we need to buy bread and toothpaste and have a pint. It doesn't really help us, does it? And so, to my mind, now, the only sensible solution is the one version of Brexit we can negotiate that does protect jobs and workers' rights and food standards and environmental standards. And that's the version of Brexit. In a second referendum against Remain, and however you voted last time, or if you've changed your mind, vote with pride. Don't let anyone tell you you're wrong, because you're not. Go out there and do it, and whichever answer we then get, that is it. We're done. That process is over.
But aren't you, in effect, nailing your feet to the floor? Because just say, for instance, people were adamant, their one policy in their own little life. I mean, it's not in mine. There's so many other things as well. But I, you know, if just say, for instance, it's a case of, well, I voted to come out and you didn't do what I wanted you to do. That's not democracy. Why should I vote for you? And if that is the case, then people will vote Conservative or they'll vote for something else.
Yeah.
You know, does that mean, I mean, you've got all these other policies as well, but for a lot of people, it's Brexit.
It is, and this election shouldn't be just about Brexit, because Brexit is only going to give us the answer to, do we stay or leave? As you quite highlighted a minute ago, most people really are concerned with their kids' or their grandkids' schools, whether their communities can flourish and whether the public toilets are open and the libraries are available so they can use the internet and everything else they need from those facilities. And the NHS. The NHS on the island is an amazing thing, but more and more of it's disappearing to the mainland. Brexit's not going to stop that either way round. What's going to stop that is properly funding from a government that actually genuinely believes in maintaining and improving those standards.
Okay.
And that's what's more important to me.
What would you say to, you know, people that have said to me very recently, you know, we've had X amount of years under Labour, we've had X amount of years under Tories, this is where we are. This is where we are today. It's, you know, we all play the blame game, but I look at it and think, well, you played a part in that. You know, it's, you know, Tories, Labour, this is where we are. The Liberal Democrats played a bit of a part in 2010,
yeah.
So equally you could hold them to... You could ask them a few questions as well, but I just look at it and think, do you think, and I've said this many, many times, and I sat here probably in 2010 in a different studio with Mark Chiverton.
Yeah.
And Mark Chiverton, I think, is a really, really lovely guy.
Really nice chap. Nicest man on the island, I think.
I've heard that many times, and I've said to him, Mark, you ain't never going to get elected. Because at that time he was, you know, Gordon Brown was the main chap, and I said, you're never going to get elected. But I bet you double your vote or even stand a good chance if you went independent, because you got a lot of support. And, you know, I'm very conscious of the fact that we need to modernise politics, and I think, you know, maybe Labour need to modernise and come up with the times, because, you know, I'm working class, and I don't mind being called working class. I'm, you know, feet on the ground and so on. But you speak to many people and they think being working class is something filthy. It's not, I don't want to be working class and I'm better than that. And I think, well, if you were to come up with something that was a little bit more sort of, you know, upgraded version of working class, so people, it's just, do you know, I know it's garnish, but at the same time, people like it. How many people have you come across, I'm not working class?
Yeah, and do you know what, it's very sad to hear, because the working class builds our economy and our environment we live in. You know, the people that empty the bins and clean the toilets and do those things are just as, if not more important, the people
Absolutely.
At the very top. Because there's a lot of jobs I could name that if people didn't turn up for a month, not a lot of change. If people stop emptying your bins and cleaning the toilets, you'd be quite rightly furious. we shouldn't be paying these people minimum wage. We should be, actually, our attitude should change. Our attitude to what we call menial tasks is just a menial attitude. There's no such thing as menial tasks. These people deserve the right to earn a decent day's wage for a decent day's work. They should be able to afford to buy homes. We've got a situation where builders nowadays can't afford to even rent the houses they build. Electricians can't afford to buy or rent the houses they wire up. That's not right. Working class shouldn't be in any way, shape or form something to be ashamed of. It should be something in this country, something to be very, very proud of. Because without what working class people have done for decades and forever, really, we wouldn't be sat in this studio now, Ian, would we?
We would.
Where would we?
No.
That is something I genuinely believe. I own a retail shop. I love it, but it's not the most romantic of professions. But the people that work there deserve to be treated with respect, because anybody that walks through the door needs our services in the same way we need postmen, we need cleaners, we need all of those other tasks. And it does really genuinely upset me, this attitude that working class is something to be ashamed of. And the Labour Party has and always should be somebody that supports the unit of labour in return for a decent pay. And that is absolutely correct.
Let's talk about what happened last night.
Yep.
There was the NHS discussion. And, you know, by all accounts, I can't speak for the Conservatives, but you don't want to sell it off to America. You want to put money in.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that all people want is a health service that works.
Yeah.
Because a health service that works is keeping people healthy and so on. Just say, for instance, looking at it from another angle, would it be so bad to sell it to the Americans? Don't get me wrong, that's not what I want, because let's remember why it was set up in the first place. But it's not working at the moment. And I do remember a politician saying in about 1992, I can't remember what her name was, but she was irritating. It was about the only intelligent thing she said. And she said, if we don't act now, our NHS will crumble in a few years, in 20 years' time. She was absolutely bang on the money.
Yeah.
Are we at the stage where money is going to make it work, or are we at the stage where maybe we put the whole shebang into the mix? I'm looking at politics now.
Yeah.
I think politics is kind of under the microscope. It's got dirty. Like it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like what they're doing, and certainly not what they're not doing. Earn your money. You're getting 75 grand
a
year.
It's about 79, but
do your job. And I don't feel that I'm getting value for my money. And I would imagine there's an awful lot of people up and down the country.
Yeah.
But what would you say? I mean, you know, national, is it fixable with money, or do we need to be radical?
It's if a third party, country or company, is prepared to take on an NHS that's failing, we have to ask why. And it's as simple as substituting the word inefficiency for profit. So generally, businesses don't take on things that they know are going to guarantee to fail. They take on things that they know they can make a success of. The problem would be the Americans taking over. They would take it over for profit. Now, they wouldn't be interested in particularly the actual health part. They're interested in the pharma part, the drugs bit.
Right.
So it would look quite small, and the Conservative Party would be able to say, well, we've only sold off 4 or 5% of it, or whatever it is. But that 4 or 5% is the bit where a lot of the money is. So there's a prediction that letting the Americans get involved in the pharmaceutical part of it would cost an extra £500 million a week because of what they demand as part of a trade deal. Now, that's unacceptable, because that's just providing the service we've currently got for a higher price. The Tories have managed to find another $20.5 billion a year to put in the health service. They've admitted that we need that. The Labour Party is committing to another $5.5 billion on top. Now, these numbers sound massive. The reason they sound massive, too, is one of us, there's 60 million of us in the country, so even a tenner each is 600 million. So let's not worry too much about the phrase billion. But also the problems become so big, because we need about 3.94% average increase on NHS spending a year to maintain where we are. The last 4 or 5 years of Tory government have been 1% or 1.1% by their own admission because of austerity. What that actually means is you're constantly falling behind, because all you're doing is a little pay rise for people and nothing on infrastructure. We've got a massive backlog of building works in hospitals, where you've got a situation where you're paying consultants to sort out problems that shouldn't exist in the fabric of the buildings. The £5.5 billion extra works out less than £100 each, we won't pay it each, it will be taxed in a different way. I don't think there's anybody out there that would say who uses the NHS that an extra £100 a year each isn't good value to provide something that would cost us a hell of a lot more if it was private. So a long-winded way of saying, no, I don't think we'd... I know we don't privatise it. What we do is we actually look at how we provide funding at the point of where it's needed, and that's how we fund the NHS on what's needed.
Okay, I mean it's something we all want it to. We don't want it to be sold off.
No,
we want it to work.
Yeah,
it was set up. It was the best in the world. Yeah. Now it's not.
No.
And
it's willful destruction. If I'm honest, it is a willful destruction through small underfunding to make it look like it's not working because it's too much of a political problem for certain parties to cope with. And it does come down to good management, but a lot of it is funding. You'll know problems you have at home. Some of them you can manage, like a tap washer. You can keep faffing about with it and put a bit of PTFE tape around it, but eventually you're going to have to buy a new washer or a new tap. And it's the same thing in the NHS. It's a bit of willful destruction that just needs funding properly where we have a need. You know, we've got a dementia unit on the island refurbished to a high cost. We can't afford to staff it. You've got people now paying a lot of money to go over to the mainland. You've got very ill kids having to go to the mainland because we can't afford to treat them here. And that's just not right. If we're saying we can put a cost on people's well-being, then we need to have a good hard look at our way we talk about people's well-being, I think.
OK, I'm going to tell you a little story.
Yeah.
OK, and then we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and Connor's going to come in. He's got some killer questions for you, apparently.
Ooh, hello.
Okay. Back in 2001, I, with another politician that wasn't Labour or Conservative, we decided that we were going to set up a march into London. And we got 21,000 signatures, and we knocked on Tony Blair's door.
Yep.
With these 21,000 signatures, all asking for... we wanted to be independently away from Hampshire. We wanted to be, when it come down to the figures...
The time, yeah.
When it come down to the figures, and we were always at the back of the queue when we were divvying up for the funds.
Yeah.
And we said, we want to be independent from that. Okay, so we would be treated better because I don't think we get the funds that we deserve.
No.
We are always at the back of the queue. Yeah. Bearing in mind we had a Labour government, we knocked on the door and Tony was out. But he sent down Alan Johnson to meet with us guys at somewhere in Ventnor Botanical Gardens.
Yeah.
And he came down and all these councillors that were probably Conservatives and Lib Dems, there may have been one Labour guy because I don't think there's ever been more than two.
Never been many.
But they were all blowing smoke and you know where. And, they're not actually asking him the question. And I turned to Alan Johnson, bearing in mind that at the time he was the right-hand man of Tony.
Yeah.
So if anything happened to Tony, he would have been Prime Minister. And I said to him, look, forgive me, I'm going to be blunt, I'm going to ask you the question. The reason why we got you here is because we want to know why we are lumped in statistically with Hampshire, because when you do it that way, we don't get the funds that we deserve. And I said, so what are the chances of you changing the system so it will affect us in a positive way?
Mm.
No, young man, you won't ever get that. But, and this is his exact turn of phrase, if you ever wanted to talk about a fixed link, the government would always listen.
All right,
and that's the response I got. So I look at it and I think, hang on a minute, that's, 18 years ago, and we asked you for your help.
Yeah.
We came in on three Southern Vectis buses with 21,000 signatures and you kind of ignored us because we wanted to be statistically away from Hampshire so we could be, we would feel the benefits.
Yeah.
I'm gutted because here we are 18 years down the line and we're still at the back of the queue.
Yep.
And it's really quite sad. And I just look at it, I've become very disillusioned.
Yeah.
And I look at it and I think the choices we've got have always been like red, blue.
Yeah.
Is that the choices we've got now? No, there are other people. But realistically, are they going to be getting in? Are they going to be, having a say? Are there going to be enough of them to actually make a difference and listen to the people to what they actually want?
Yeah.
And for the Isle of Wight to get the funds that it deserves?
Yeah. I think part of the problem is you're quite right. And under a Labour government, even then, is they knew this was never going to be a Labour seat back then. Hopefully it might change. But also under a current government with a 21,000 Tory majority, they don't really need to do anything for you because it's a very safe seat. Equally, I think they've missed the point that the population's grown on the Isle of Wight, and I think they missed the point that we've got a really thriving economy here that really needs its own specialist help and funding from council. It would be, I know Bob Seeley's tried to get island status, to which, because there's a general election popped up, Boris has given agreement in principle. But that would be something I would absolutely fight for, because they can't have it both ways. Either we are part of the mainland and we get all the funding and everything we need for being part of the mainland, or we get island status and the funding we get for being a separate island. Because at the moment we are a bit in limbo, and I think the way the hospital's funded because of it, like you quite rightly say, is inadequate. I think the way our schools are funded and managed, not by the teachers are amazing, is inadequate. And I think the help we get for our communities in general is absolutely inadequate. That is the reason I want to go into politics. I don't need a career in politics. I really don't. I'm quite happily sit on the back benches for the rest of my political career, just representing the Isle of Wight, because that is the most important thing in this process, that this island gets a chance to get back to its former days of glory, but have a chance of being even further down the road of what it's capable of. And that is my main goal.
OK, we'll talk more about that goal after a quick break. We're going to come back and I think we're going to be joined by Connor.
Radio with the community at heart. This is Vectis Radio. FM 104.6.
The Medina Theatre, your premier venue for arts, music and comedy.
The Country Superstars Experience on the 22nd of November is a fantastic tribute to the legendary names of country music. Two of today's biggest stars feature in a tribute to Ariana and JoJo on the 24th of November. And you can enjoy a fantastic new show, Carol, the Music of Carole King, on the 27th of November.
Call the box office on 823-884 or visit medinatheatre.co.uk.
Hi everyone, we are the White Bay Hotel, situated in Sandown, one of the island's best kept secrets, with breathtaking views of the coastline and panoramic views across the island, and just 5 minutes walk to the beach and town centre. Within our hotel is a large, fully catered restaurant and bar, with free Wi-Fi and parking. Check out our customer reviews and feedback. For more details, call 01983 402518. For bookings or inquiries, that's 01983 402518.
Isle of Wight Food Bank provides emergency food and support to local people in crisis. Your support helps stop local people going hungry. For more information, ring the office on 01983 292 040 or check out isleofwightfoodbank.org.uk/.
Hello, I'm Kieran Thompson, actor, producer, sand and middle school chess champion 2002. Join me every Sunday on the New Music Show for the best in new tunes. One, two, what you do? From fresh sounds and new beats to the most beautiful songs you've heard all year. To, well, something completely different. So join me, Kieran Thompson, for the island's only show 100% dedicated to new music, Sundays from 7, only on Vectis Radio.
Everybody must be famous.
Music variety.
Music variety.
That blows your mind. Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
The Mid-Morning Show is proudly sponsored by PC Consultants, the island's leading provider of IT service, consultancy and support to businesses, public sector and private clients across the island. Call us at PC Consultants on 01983 811 711 to find out more about our award-winning service.
Welcome back to part two. We've got Richard Quigley in. He's the Labour parliamentary candidate for the election on... I was going to say June.
Yeah.
We're in December. It's December the 12th. I can't believe he's put us through this. All those schools that have had to sort of... Oh, can you reorganise your play, play, because of... Here we are.
Christmas shopping.
It's got to be done. The reason why we're getting everybody in is because we want to ask the questions. We want to find out where properly to put the cross.
Yeah.
Come December the 12th. Now, Cameron's in. No, you're not Cameron. You're Connor. Connor's in. We were talking about Cameron earlier on. And you've got some questions there, Connor, haven't you?
Yeah.
You're not yet a voter, are you?
No, I'm not, no.
But, are you interested in politics?
Not 100%, no. I think it's just a bit... Happy Dabby, whatever it's called.
Happy Dabby, right, OK. That's, see, that's... How do you get young people... Because let's be honest, I know that predominantly there's a lot of old people on the island, yeah. but how do we get young people interested in politics?
It's an interesting question, Ian, to be honest. And I think probably 20 years ago it was a lot easier. People felt that it was important. I think, as you alluded to earlier, they feel a bit switched off. It all seems to be single issue of Brexit. I've been talking to Joe Davies, who was the ex-youth MP on the island, and he was quite enlightening, really, because he said, you know, we're not. It's not just about skate parks and youth clubs, and whilst those things are important, it's minimum wage, the environment, and education and tuition fees are the most important things. So I think the conversation we should be having with people under 25 are to insult their intelligence, but ask them proper political questions. I'm sure Colin's going to do it. I am flinching a bit.
Come on, fire the first one out there.
You'll be happy to know these are not political questions.
Oh, even better.
More
I'm off the
personal
hook.
One.
Unless it catches me out on something else. I'm in prison.
Well, we know you have businesses on the island. So,
yes.
What businesses do you own on the island?
I've got a fish and chip shop in Cowes, which I'm very fortunate to have. I've got some very great staff and very great customers. Without them, I'd be sunk. I've got a catering business and a lettings business as well. But the lettings isn't, it's just for one main client.
Okay, and how popular are they on some days?
The chip shop that can be really popular. imagine in Cows Week in Cows, it's fantastically busy. And without my staff, I would be absolutely ruined.
Yeah.
But yeah, it can be very, very, very busy.
Yeah. Okay. And my second question is if money was no object, what would be the first you were to change on the island?
Ooh, now
good question.
It is a very good question, and I think because it affects most people, I'd have to say the ferries. If money was no object, I'd make the ferries free for everyone. Because then that hopefully gets us out of the fixed link debate, because then you can get across, I'd make them more regular and free.
Yeah.
That's not a policy statement, by the way. That's just money was no object.
I mean, how do you stand, where do you stand on a fixed link?
On the fixed link, it's genuinely 50-50. I think the social and economic benefits are massive, but I also see the concerns over the environmental impacts and the infrastructure. I think it's one of those things that we'd have to get a proper funded Department for Transport feasibility study done, so we can actually understand the costs, what it means to the marine environment, and the land environment, and then really put it back to the people, because at the end it's such a massive thing. I think you'd feel pretty miffed if you didn't get, as a resident, you didn't get a chance to decide.
But should they decide? I mean, they didn't decide. We didn't decide when, they decided to take away St Mary's Roundabout or, Personally, I don't think we should.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's an interesting point of view. I think for me it's just because it would be a massive thing, because it's going to come down to private funding as well. It's not going to be funded by, at the moment, certainly not funded by centrally. So then you've got this thing where it's not necessarily going to be cheaper either. So if we're saying the real problem is getting across the Solent regularly at an affordable price, then we've already got ferries that can do that, and we can do something about that one way or another.
And I'll say again, that, you know, I've said this yesterday and I'll say it today, I don't think the ferry companies get the credit they deserve.
And I agree. They are commercial enterprises that are having to run services all the way through the day and night that sometimes aren't that busy. I think it is annoying when you try to book and it's 170, 180 quid, but that is economics at the end of the day. But I think there is something to do along the lines of subsidised regulation, because the ferry companies aren't there to get in our way. They employ staff who must go home, and when they read the county press letters and get bashed, must feel pretty dreadful, because they go to work. Workers are really very hard on shifts, making sure we all get on and off the boat safely and on time. And I think that's the bit that's very, very unfair on the ferry bashing. But I do see why people want an affordable cross-Solent solution.
Sure. And let's be honest, I like the idea of... I think it was Carl Feeney that said it's not a feasibility study, it's a viability study.
Yeah, viability study.
But I think once you've done that and you've got that in place, you can then weigh up your options.
Yep.
Are we going to be better off with it, or are we going to be better off without it?
Yeah.
And I think until we reach that stage, and then at least that we could put that to bed and say, look, we've done the study, it ain't going to work, now go away quickly.
I agree.
It's a case of full steam ahead.
I agree, and a properly funded study that actually independently looks at, as you've said, the options, the viability. So we're not, because otherwise it's going to be a circular conversation for another 100 years' time.
It will never, other than
some landmass growing up out of the Solent and doing it for us.
All right, you've got another question, but hold fire.
Okay.
Hold fire on that question, because obviously we want to get the best out of you. What's your plans? If you get voted in, what's your plans?
So for me, this is, I know nationally general elections tend to be about national issues, but for this time for me, this is all about the island. And I mentioned it slightly earlier, but the education system on the island, full of great employees, full of great teachers, but underfunded. Sitting talking to several schools, as I have done this week, is we need to get per pupil funding back to the levels it were, so they can do, they do some amazing things outside of school, but those are things they're having to cut. Things such as we've seen the libraries close on the island, we've seen the toilets close because of lack of funding for the council. The council get kicked for it, but effectively they're just not being given the money by central government. So we need to return, we need to give them a mechanism to get back to where, I don't believe for a minute any councillor turns up and says, I want to close the toilets because that's what's caused austerity, or it should be, has been the cause of austerity. They do it because they're under strict budget control. We're in a situation where everything has gone online, pretty much. If you're in, on in-work benefits, you have to access that through online. Libraries used to provide a place people go and have internet access for free or very cheaply. They've disappeared. So rebuilding our communities, but also the NHS on the island, for me, is the big one. Is this, this danger of us ending up with just A&E and maternity and nothing else, it is quite worrying. And I think that would be something I will just spend my most of my time fighting for. And the island deal, I'll throw that one at the last.
Island deal?
Yeah, the island status.
Okay, go on, chuck it in now, because otherwise we'll get to the time.
Well, it's, I know Bob Seeley's been spending a lot of time, as I mentioned earlier, doing this, with, and he's got agreement in principle. But we need to put this needs sorting properly. We need to, my plan would be to sit next to John McDonnell for the first 3 months of Parliament saying, I'm not stopping whispering in your ear until we get a special island status and you come up with a plan for proper funding for the Isle of Wight. Things you mentioned earlier, which we seem like we're at the back of the queue. The island's got a decent-sized population now. We're the biggest constituency in the country. We need to start punching well above our weight. We need to start saying, hang on a minute, I don't want agreement in principle, I want agreement. This gets sorted, and that's that would be my priority.
I mean, you could sort of say to him, if you do get that opportunity, you could sort of say to him, hey, look, you're approaching retirement age. There's every chance you could retire on the Isle of Wight.
Exactly.
You know, be, pump some money in, it'll be better for you.
It will be, yeah.
That's the way I'm looking at it.
I'm going to write that down, if that's all right. That might become part of what I do.
What's your next question, Connor?
This is the last question, and what is your favourite place on the island? Anywhere you can visit, and why?
Do you know what? I really love visiting Ventnor. in the summer, winter. Obviously, I love cows, because I get to see cows every day, and I think you spoil it on the island everywhere you go. But I love Ventnor, because it is just that little bit of something different to everywhere else. And it's got it, I know it's got its own microclimate, which sometimes works in our favour, but sometimes it can be raining when it's sunny elsewhere. But I think the fact you have to walk up and downhill quite a lot is good. It's good for the old ticker.
Yeah.
And the fact you've got a view, just a beautiful view from the top of the hill. And there's some Steep Hill Cove and places like that, just absolutely amazing.
And yet the Isle of Wight is a very, very beautiful country after all. I mean, there's so many places you can visit and there's so much stuff you can see. For example, you could see like the mainland from cows or something.
And I think as well, going back to the ferry issue, is actually sometimes it's really nice getting on the ferry when you're coming back home, or certainly when visitors come, because it feels like you're properly going on holiday rather than just driving down the motorway.
Yeah.
So we're kind of running out of time. We've still got plenty of time, but is that all your questions now?
Yeah, that's everything.
You've done them all now?
Yeah.
Okay. How would you like free internet?
Free internet?
Yeah.
Oh, crikey, that's a big ask.
It should be an easy enough question to answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, have a listen to this, because this is interesting.
Okay.
Because I sat there listening to this last week, and I thought, first of all, you know, you hear other people and they go, it's pie in the sky, it never happened. It's a masterstroke. Whichever way you look at it, it's a masterstroke. Yeah. But then I thought to myself, hang on a sec. Without actually reading the details and knowing how it all works, there are a lot of companies that kind of offer you free internet for a period of time.
Yeah.
There are people that offer it to you, and all you've got to do is pay for your line rental and so on. And, you know, we are approaching that world where we're already there, where everyone needs internet.
Yeah.
And how much of that is, you know, proper chance of happening, or is it like, let's chuck that out there and that will be a ratings winner because everyone needs it or everyone would want it? It's just like saying we're going to give everybody free electric.
Yeah, well, if you think back to the days, we'll remember the old GPT, yep. is, which was nationalised, government owned, is if it wasn't, we wouldn't have all had a phone line, certainly not in remote locations. You know, the government had to commit to providing us all the phone line. So the modern infrastructure for is now the internet and fibre. So we're lucky on the Isle of Wight. We've got White Fibre who do an amazing job, and they're getting us up to gigabit speed ahead of most of the places in the country. I think there's only somewhere like Hull or whatever with a similar sort of infrastructure. So we're quite lucky. So it's not necessarily something we have to think about too hard on the island unless you're on a connection that's not great. I entirely believe it's a real commitment because it's infrastructure. As I mentioned before, if you need to access anything to do with the government, I don't know if you've used the government gateway website, absolutely impossible to use on your phone. It's not geared up for your phone. If you're on Inwood Benefit or anything like that, you have to have a gateway number, you go online. It's quite expensive if you're, you know, worried about heating and eating at the end of every month to spend £30-35 on internet access. Now, what they're saying is they're not going to stop these companies selling premium services. They're still going to need them to manage the network, but they're saying we need to come up with a high-speed, entry-level, free access, which to me is a bit like the old phone lines, makes perfect sense, because, like you've said, everything is online.
Okay, you mentioned White Fibre there.
Yeah.
And I'm now thinking, what happens to them? Funnily enough,
I was speaking with the chief executive the other day, and he did push me, and he gave me quite a robust conversation. And at the moment, it's a bit early days to say, but there is no interest in certainly excellent companies like that not being there to provide. Now, what the discussions have to be around is how we can make sure their business model still works going forward as a commercial enterprise. We don't just want to wipe out half of their income, which means then they can't support it. And there will be a way of managing that. And people like the chief executive at White Fibre are smart people, and I'm sure they'll happily work with us when they get more detail. But that is going to be the devil in the detail, is how we make sure this works properly in what is a very commercial environment, and just saying it as a wish list. And I'm absolutely committed, with the good quality MPs who hopefully will be returning to Parliament, that's possible. It is a real possibility.
Okay, so the worries are, just say for instance, when Connor gets to 18 and he's got to purchase some Wi-Fi, he might get it free with the government, or he might have to go to White Fibre or another company and pay for it.
The free would be provided through White Fibre's network, and it would be subsidised by the government. And this is me talking rather than getting fully across the policy at the moment. So everybody would be entitled to it free on the island via White Fibre, but the government would pay White Fibre to manage the network, and Connor wouldn't pay for use at home. So we haven't got enough provision across the whole country for BT. And I think the problem the government's had is BT hasn't met its promise. It promised high-speed internet for the whole country 5-odd years ago at a cost of £5 billion. It's not done it by any stretch of the imagination. You've still got people on dial-up in the country, which isn't right. When the rest of us can rely on certain things.
Is that Labour taking them to task? I mean, is that...
I think it is, actually. I really do think it is. I think for too long you've got a situation with BT where they pay massive dividends but weren't prepared to invest particularly in infrastructure, because it means they can't pay the high dividends. So actually funding this, it's self-funding. By the time you've got through the infrastructure costs, the dividends they're paying outweigh what it is to start providing free internet, which effectively you are subsidising somebody's share dividend through what you get charged for your internet at the end of the day. And that to me just seems a bit unfair. If the levels of dividend were sensible, not hundreds of millions, and the chief executive wasn't earning 2 million plus excessive share options, and I'm not against anyone doing well, don't get me wrong, then I could see it. But it's not. We're in a position where you get penalised with poor access, but you have to pay for it, and somebody else succeeds off the back of that.
See, I've said to my wife, I say it jokingly, but I kind of mean a little bit of it, and I say to her, and I know this is wrong on every level, and if I was like being sat in your shoes now, I'd say it and I'd lose votes.
Yeah.
What this country needs is a little bit of communism for about 5 years, just to get it back on its feet.
Yep.
And you know, a little bit of a fairer situation, and then we can grow it. After that, we can take the barriers off and get away from communism. Now, that is where I'm coming from.
But I think the kernel of what you're saying is how a lot of people feel. It's time for a fairer way of doing things. We're all in a capitalist society. There's pointless as railing against it individually. And probably a lot of the stuff we see around us we could attribute to capitalism, but all of it has come from an investment by government somewhere along the line. There's very few, if anything, you'll find that is entirely down to private investment in our modern lives. And whilst I wouldn't go as far as saying we need communism for 5 years, I do agree what we need is just a fairer way.
Fairer.
And it's not just about distributing cash, it's about distributing welfare in terms of everybody doing well. To have people at very one end of the spectrum and people at the very other is why we're getting this division, and that's not right.
OK, look, we're running out of time. I've got to ask you this question because, yes, I'm asking everybody, why should I vote for you?
Well, that's a very good question. I think you may have to look in the whites of my eyes and decide, am I the person you can trust to go to Westminster and represent the Isle of Wight the best? My interest is the island, and my fight will be for providing the island with the communities we once had and we want to rebuild, getting our schooling sorted, the island deal, and our NHS. That comes down to, do you believe I can go and do that? I believe I can, and I know I will do.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to add? I mean, we've still got about 3 or 4 minutes. I just wanted to get that in before...
No, that's fine. You know, you've been very kind to me. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. I've been well-watered.
All right, let me ask you a stinky question.
Yeah, go on.
Okay,
that's my fault.
What's the question? You shouldn't have said it.
Shouldn't.
What's the question that you don't like answering? What's the one where it riles you and annoys you? Oh. And let's clarify it. There must be something that really irritates.
We're talking politics, not personally, I guess. The one about Jeremy Corbyn being a terrorist sympathiser. Now, so my answer to this is, if this is true, why are there so many official photographs of him? I mean, there's official photographs of every leader ever with Gerry Adams and whoever else, take your pick. Corbyn won the Gandhi Medal for Peace for his part in peace in Northern Ireland. If there's so many official photographs of him being a terrorist sympathiser, you should ask why the official photographs are not sneaky ones taken on an old Polaroid. And the other is, if our secret services, and I say this is tongue-in-cheek, it's a bit glib, are as good as we think, and no, MI6, MI5, if they can't find a known terrorist sympathiser when he turns up to work the same place every day, we're all in trouble, aren't we? So I think we just need to read beyond what that is. And, you know, this guy, I've had some abuse just in this process. He gets the most incredible abuse day in, day out, and he still gets out of bed and puts his foot out the front door and does what he's doing. I think we just need to give him... You might not agree with him. He's not going to be there forever. There's some great people in Cabinet, or will be in Cabinet. We just need to read beyond what we're told every day and have a bit of respect, I think, for individuals.
Yeah, no, I kind of get that. When he was asked a question yesterday about things, and he did clarify, absolutely not. And I think that's good enough, isn't it? We leave it at that.
Yeah.
I think we have to have truth and honesty and so on.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've had that I don't think we've ever had it in politics. If you go back in there, you know, over the years, it's always been the same.
Yeah.
I voted to come out of Europe, not because I wanted to come out of Europe. I wanted change.
Yeah.
I wanted to be represented.
And you're not on your own.
And I know that I'm not on my own. And I know that people out there, they just want people to represent.
Yeah.
If we vote you in, we want you to do what we've asked you to do and what you promised to do and so on. And I don't think that we've had that, not just on the island, but I don't think we've had that nationally. But I don't want to keep going over Brexit. We did vote to come out, and out means out, not another vote. That's the only thing that I look at and I think, well, that's a cloudy area.
Yeah.
The one election that I voted on and actually got what I wanted, you're taking it away from me, and maybe we ought to address that. Maybe we ought to rethink that one and say, hey, look, maybe we should, you know, have a little vote on that at some point and say, look, no, sorry, we can't do that. It's democratic. We voted for it.
Yeah.
But everything else, I mean, you come across as a nice guy.
Thank you very much.
You come across as, you're listening to what people want when it comes down to the, you know, young kids. And that's the one thing that I look at and I think we should think of the future. We should think of kids. We should think of schools. We should, you know, and if we don't put them first, if we don't put things, a mechanism in place, God help the future.
Yeah, we've all had it, basically.
Yeah, and here we are. We're here where we are. Sadly, we're here where we are because we've had the last X amount of years, and it has been based on Conservatives and Labour as well. And it's down to the people what they want. Do they want change?
Yeah.
Or do they want somebody that's got an opportunity to do and carry out those things? I don't know. I still, my options are still open. I've still got 4 more people to see. So you haven't got the job yet.
Not yet.
I still need to see. But, you know, I value and respect the fact that you picked up the chalice, because you know you weren't supposed to. It was down to somebody else, and you've chucked yourself in at the deep end.
Thank you very much.
And I wish you all the very best for that.
Thank you.
Good luck with that, and I hope it goes really, really well. And I say, I won't say what I said to Carl Feeney, because he basically has to pay the £500 himself. Yeah. But you've got somebody picking up the tab for that.
Yeah, I'm very lucky in that. I'm very lucky in that respect. Yeah, I mean, ask me on the 13th of December, I feel, because I'll know one way or other by then, won't I? So,
okay. Well, thanks for coming in, and
thank you.
Good luck with the rest of the campaign. And hopefully, that manifesto will be out tomorrow.
Let's hope so.
Along with everyone else's. I'm not having a dig. I'm just thinking, come on, let's get it out. Let's get it on out there. Thank you. And thank you, Connor. Stand by. John Hackers on the way next. Stand by.